It's summer on the coast, and you know what that means. No, not more fog. It means Ruben is on vacation, and it's time for the Summer Mike Series. Here's your host for the Summer Mike Series, Crystalyn.
Great start to your Friday, and you had a wonderful week. I'm very excited today to fill in for our dear sweet Ruben, who is flown the coop out of the country, having the best time of his life with his family. So, Ruben, if you're listening, we miss you, but we hope you're having the best time possible. And I am joined in studio today with two local awesomes, Aisha and Barbara Dye. And if you want to call in and talk to them about any of the wonderful topics they're going to be covering today, you can call in at 650-560-9851. That's 650-560-9851. And take it away, Aisha. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I do have a little bit of a cold, but it's okay. My voice is just fine. Yes, I'm going to introduce myself first for those folks that don't know me. I have been on the show before, both as a guest and as a host. But reintroducing myself, I'm a longtime resident of Half Moon Bay. I've been in Half Moon Bay for the last 17 years. I am a leader of a nonprofit. Have been in biotech my entire life, but I'm also very engaged in the community just because it's the community that I've been in, community that I love. And there are so many issues that I think need engagement from citizens, and I'm just happy to chime in. I am a parent as well of an 8-year-old, and I'm very interested in creating the best environment for her. One of the things that I'm engaged in is Coastside Democrats. It's a great opportunity to get the local community engaged in activating and making a difference in our local community. And that's why I'm so excited about the opportunity to bring in today a fantastic person, Barbara Dye.
Good morning.
Who is the president of Coastside Democrats. She'll introduce herself. I have enjoyed being a member of Coastside Democrats. It's exceeded my expectations because as an individual, there is only so much you can do. But being part of a group like this, you kind of multiply your power and your efforts. And I encourage everybody to join. But I'll let Barbara Dye introduce herself as an individual first. Tell us more about you. How you grew up, where you grew up and how you came to Half Moon Bay and decided to engage in local politics.
Well, I grew up in Massachusetts, and my dad was a town meeting member, so I was aware of participating in democracy very young. And then went to college in Pennsylvania, joined the Peace Corps right out of college, and was in West Africa for 3 years in Ghana, which was an amazing and positive experience. Came back. I got married in the middle there.
That's important.
My husband and I went to Ghana together. And then he was a consultant and traveled a lot. And I was settled down in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And then I know it's complicated, but I'll try to go through it quickly. And then we got transferred to Los Angeles, which I was really happy about because I'd always wanted to live in California. And so I spent 25 years in Palos Verdes, which is part of Los Angeles County, where I did a whole bunch of different things, including being involved with the Democratic Club there.
Yep.
I was elected one of the delegates to the 2000 National Convention, which was really exciting when Al Gore got nominated. So then when we were, and I did city politics, I did, I worked for 2 years for Congresswoman Jane Harmon as a field representative. Awesome. I actually got my start with her through PTA. And we were going to lobby her on education issues. And she had met me through something I'd done during the campaign where she ran for Congress and called me in after the PTA lobbying visit and said, "Would you like a job?"
Oh, that's
just
awesome.
Completely surprised me. And so I worked for her for a bit. So I was head of the land trust there, and we did a big deal with the state to purchase the remaining open space, which now is sliding into the ocean, but that's another whole story. And then when my husband and I were kind of winding up our various projects, we decided to do Peace Corps again. So we joined, went to Mexico for 3 years, came back, sold our house in Palos Verdes, and all three daughters live up here. And so we moved up here. And, you know, I'm not a person who sits around. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I did, because when you're in the Peace Corps, you have to be really non-political. Mm-hmm. I had wanted to get back into being an advocate for Democratic politics. I'm a relatively conservative Democrat, but still, I'm an enthusiastic mm-hmm. Democrat. And I say to people, those are two different things. Mm-hmm. I really believe in the principles. Anyway, joined the club. They put me on the board immediately.
Yeah.
And so I've been part of it ever since. And then, of course, during the pandemic, there wasn't really a lot of scope for this kind of activity, just group events and so forth. So the membership dwindled. And then it just seemed as if it was time to have more engagement. And so I asked Lenny Mendonca. I said, Lenny, I'm thinking about taking leadership in the Democratic Club. And he said, I'll help you. And so he was our first speaker, and he's been very generous with Brews and Views and lots of other things. So we've been able to grow the club from like 30 or 40 people to we're over 150 now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We
That's
have
awesome.
Multiple events.
That's great.
Going on.
That's
so
great.
That was a long answer, but.
No, that's a great answer. I learned about your life story, first off, from Massachusetts. I was just in Boston. I just came back literally on Wednesday, so for a conference. But also like about the Peace Corps, my dad just passed here in Half Moon Bay in December from pancreatic cancer. But he was from Senegal, which is also in West Africa, and we ended up shipping his body all the way to Senegal to honor his wishes. But he had a long career in diplomacy. So the Peace Corps is something that really does resonate to me as well, because it's a way to bring some of the values of the United States in a non-political way, mm-hmm. But to kind of local countries that are suffering from underdevelopment. So I'm so glad you did that. And it's so different from local politics. I know that because I've myself straddled international and then local. It's just a very different spectrum. But I just love how you have had both in your background and how you've taken the club to a different level. It takes a certain kind of leader to do that. And I just want to build on something that you just stated about being a conservative Democrat, which is fine. I think one of the things that I've noticed in the politics ever since I've myself been involved in the Democratic Party, there is a lot of division, too, within the Democratic Party. There is this sense of like being progressive versus being a moderate versus being a conservative. And I think I've often viewed that myself as labels that are not exactly. always fair. And I think that are sometimes weaponized to kind of put people in a box and invalidate everything that they say. And one of the things that I think is an opportunity, especially under, this administration and the times that we live in, is to unite Democrats across all spectrums of beliefs and to get rid of labels, because we'll need, an all-hands-on-deck strategy to overcome the time that we are in. So how have you seen that playing out in the, Coastside Democrats? And have you seen different types of beliefs come together within the Coastside Democrats? And is there disagreement? Is there unity? And how do you handle giving room to different kinds of beliefs?
I haven't seen any problems.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's on board. We all want to speak up. We all care about the basic values of this country. I haven't seen any conflict at all.
Okay. So. Well, that's good and bad, because personally, myself, I view conflict. I was just talking to somebody about that just yesterday, more in the professional world. I do view conflict as a good thing and as a force for good, because it does bring good ideas and innovation to the table. Only if it can be handled constructively and with professionalism. So, so I think it's good that there hasn't been, but I think there is an opportunity to ensure that there are all voices are are brought to the table, but also that there are like different beliefs that can just constructively talk about issues and like help improve the state of the party, because I think the party does need a new vision. But I think it's a great thing that there hasn't been conflict. So,
and I have a quick question just before you move on. Is there a Coastside Republican Club?
Not that I know of. There's kind of a group of people who do tend to comment on some of, you know,
the things.
I'm very careful what I post on Nextdoor.
Sure.
I got banned for a few weeks at one point, but there's a few people who make intelligent comments, but I don't think there's any group.
Yeah, so that might be something, I mean, just to the point of, like, being able to have open dialogue about what's happening and although you're speaking more about, you know, uniting the Democratic Party as one piece, but, you know, there's people on the Republican side that are probably, you know, still aligned with a lot of the things that we would like to see and not see, and I think it would probably be very interesting if there was a Coastside Republican Club that could then, you know, have discussions with the Democratic Club and see where there's common ground and, you know, start those conversations even on the local level to try to get more people on the same page of what would be, you know, nice things to see in our local
politics.
That's
a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, you're right. I haven't seen a Coastside Republican Party, but I think there was a San Mateo County Republican Party, because I have seen them endorse things, put out letters. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I think there are Republicans that are also, like, on all sides of the spectrum, some mm-hmm. more conservative than others. And I think, especially now, what I've read is that many folks that are Republican are identifying to a lot of the values of the Democratic Party and also wanting to join in this fight for change. So I also think that the party division, Republican versus Democrat, is also one of those things that sometimes, like, puts a label that puts people in a box that may not be that straightforward, right? So I do invite everybody, whether or not they identify or officially are Democrats, to kind of explore joining Coastside Democrats. You know, like Barbara has said, it's been a very collegial environment, so I'm sure that their voices would also be heard. If there is a Coastside Republican Party, let us know as well, because there may be one that we may not be aware, so that we can also engage with them in a constructive way, because at the end of the day, it's about making the Coastside a better place and a place that can be one where all of us want to be part of.
Yeah. And, of course, there's a difference between the parties. There's a county Democratic Party and a county Republican Party, for sure. And then there are, I think, about a dozen Democratic clubs. Some are ethnically based, you know, South Pacific Islander, so forth. There's a bunch of different clubs.
Yeah.
And so at this point, I think we're by far the biggest.
The biggest, yeah. And you've grown it. You've grown it quite a bit since you've been on the board. So I do think you're the right person. You have an amazing amount of energy for this work. So I can see that it's a passion for you. So thank you for what you've done. So tell us more about the mission of Coastside Democrats and some of the issues that you may be focused on right now.
Well, my focus has been to bring our elected representatives to the club members, and almost all of our meetings are open to the public. If we close them, the only one is our annual meeting, and if there isn't space, mm-hmm. but we welcome everybody. And we've had just, I think, really interesting speakers. We started the year we had Assemblyman Berman, who talked about his accomplishments and so forth. We had our annual meeting. Our speaker was our supervisor, Ray Mueller, mm-hmm. who came and did an excellent recap on the projects he's been working on. And it was so interesting because, you know, we see it in bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Some issue pops up and we read about it and we think, oh, I have an opinion on that in some way.
Yeah.
But it's useful to be able to have these real elected officials who are speaking for us come in front and tell us what they're doing and then have an opportunity to answer questions. Mm-hmm. So I just got a message from Senator Becker's office. He's going to be speaking on August 24th for us.
Awesome. Great.
And then we also have specific topics. Like, we had an excellent meeting with Coastside Hope and ALAS about the laws around immigration and how it can impact our neighbors and our friends and family members even potentially, and ways to deal with that. That was, I think, well-timed and very powerful. And thank you so much to those groups who do so much for our community. And then after that, we had one with the ACLU, and they talked about some of the things they're focusing on. So that's good. And then this coming week, I'm very excited. On Thursday, we're having Joe Cotchett on the topic, litigating for justice.
That's awesome.
And he's, for people who don't know, he's been the major legal force behind almost all of the environmental battles in California. He saved Martin's Beach. He's just been there for every fight that matters. And he's also very active with the Democratic Party. So it should be real interesting to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've been really impressed with the speakers. I've gone to some of those sessions. And it's a variety, like you said, from elected officials to sessions about ACLU and helping with legal immigration rights. How do you get all those folks to want to engage? Senator Becker also. He actually was supposed to be on this show today, but he had a schedule conflict. He does want to be on the show at some point, but a schedule conflict came up. Understandably, it's been a very busy time in Sacramento. But, yeah, how do you get all those folks like that to kind of join and want to engage and talk to us at the local level? Because those are very hyper-local issues that the Coastside Democrats deals with.
They're pretty happy to come. In the fall, we have a endorsing meeting where for local races, and you know, the local paper doesn't even deal with Granada Community Services District or the school board, really. It's important that there be somebody talking to the local candidates, mm-hmm. and making recommendations. So we do that for all the races that are up in the fall. We also endorse in statewide races. We don't do national. And until recently, we were told that we couldn't endorse differently from the county Democrats. But we found that in the state paperwork, it says independent chartered clubs can endorse independently.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had both candidates for Congress, Sam Liccardo and Evan Lowe. Yes. We had actually successful meetings with both of them. And Sam was just here all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Assemblyman Lowe was busy with his job, but still, Sam was great. He learned local issues. He showed up. He was terrific. And so we were the only Democrats in the county to endorse him. Mm-hmm. So we're very proud to do it. So yeah. He actually, one of his first town halls after he was elected, he came and talked to us. And again, Lenny Mendonca was very helpful. So we had it at Maverick's house, which is where we're going to have the Cotchett event, so we can have a bigger crowd. So he gave a great town hall. It was really,
yeah, that's
really
awesome.
Really terrific.
I'm glad you mentioned this endorsement situation with the congressman, because I was engaged myself in the endorsement process, because I was at the time a delegate, elected delegate for this district to the California Democratic Party. So I got to see and witness the endorsement process at that level. And Evan Lowe ended up being the California Democratic Party endorsed candidate. But Sam Liccardo missed that only by one vote. And I got to witness some of the process behind the endorsement, and I wasn't really satisfied with how it went. And I had also seen that Sam Liccardo had engaged a lot more on the coast side. So I definitely thought he was the better candidate. And I'm right now a delegate for him, so I am biased. But he is somebody that brings a lot of expertise but also care for the coast side, but also for his district as a whole. And I definitely think he's the better candidate. But I do remember what you were stating, that like because Evan Lowe had been California Democratic Party endorsed, there was a lot of pressure for all of the local county parties to also endorse him. San Mateo County Democrats endorsed Evan Lowe, but I had seen that Coastside Democrats had endorsed Sam Liccardo, and I was really satisfied and happy with the fact that you guys had taken that stance. But so thank you, and kudos on that is the point.
Well, we also thought highly of Evan Lowe. Yeah. I do want to say that. He came and he spoke very well. He answered a lot of questions. He was very effective. I know he was very active in the party. Mm-hmm. But when we looked at the level of engagement and interest in Coastside issues,
we made our choice. Yeah, he has great potential. Evan Lowe was a great also candidate, too, yeah. And I think he has a lot of potential.
We're very lucky in our elected officials here. I have to say they're all really smart, really engaged. I think we need a few more women.
Yeah.
But we really are lucky. We have great people representing us.
That is right. I mean, you're right. I think we don't have a lot of, I'm thinking now, are there any local elected officials? We do have some representation on the Board of Supervisors now of women.
Right.
The women, they are outnumbered, it's like three women and two men now, right? So, which is a big departure from the past where even 2 years ago, it was five men, right? So yeah. Now we have three women on the Board of Supervisors and two men. But you're right, we do need more representation of women, and I think more women wanting to kind of engage in the political process.
Well, but I will say I think that most of our local bodies do have ladies on them. MCC, City Council, El Granada Services. So I think mainly it's just that there's not women in the Assembly and Senate arenas for sure, but locally I think I personally see a lot more women in the day-to-day politics of the meetings that I go to than
it's mostly balanced, but I will say that GCSD was criticized for having an all-female board.
Oh, yes.
So when one of our members resigned, we actually selected for many reasons.
Yeah.
A guy.
You did, yes. Tell me more about that, because I know it's a deviation, but I know you also sit on the GCSD.
Yes.
So you are very well positioned to talk about that. Tell us more about, the resignation of the member and the selection. You don't have to go into great details.
I feel bad, and I have very carefully not said much about it, because I think it's a very difficult and sad story, and I feel bad for her. I really do. I think she was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good result, but it made me very sad the way it all happened.
The way it all happened.
Yeah.
So there's a new person that's been...
Yeah, he's great. He's got... it's funny because Nancy and Marsh and I have been on the board for a while. And mm-hmm. when he applied, we had some really good candidates, too. A couple other really excellent candidates. He said he'd been coming to our meetings for years, and we didn't recognize the name. And he walked to him and went, oh... Because he brought his boys, and they were very engaged in the discussion of the park planning process.
And who is that candidate, that person?
I can't remember his name right now.
Okay.
So he immediately went on vacation, but I'll come up with it. But, we spent 6 years. We had 53 public meetings on that park.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they were doing the mitigated negative declaration, the environmental review, we were all told to be quiet. That didn't seem, they didn't want it to seem that we were trying to influence that process, which has to be very objective. And so kind of for a year and a half, we didn't say anything. And so a lot of people lost track of the process. And they're like, did you listen to people? Well, yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
We worked really hard at listening to people. So it's exciting now because it's back. It's going through the county and there'll be more meetings. And hopefully at some point we'll build a park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I hope so. The when you said the two boys, it's not David Iblovi by any chance?
No.
Okay.
He lives in Half Moon Bay.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me more about gearing, shifting back to Half Moon Bay, tell me more about the growth of the club, the Coastside Democrats Club, which it's been amazing to see kind of the number of folks that have attended the events. I assume that there has been growth in the membership. The demographics of the club, I know you also are looking to engage more diverse demographics, younger people. Tell me more about that and why folks that are from different demographics and younger folks should engage in the Coastside Democrats.
Well, I think one factor is that younger people with families are busy.
Yeah.
And they don't really have time to do this. I don't think it's necessarily a lack of inclination. It's just that the people with the time tend to be, we used to joke in the Palos Verdes Democratic Club about how we were going to start the Young Democrats for people in their 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right.
Because we did have people that age. We'd love to expand.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to think of ways to do it, you know, to have some kind of directed at younger residents of the area who care about these issues and may be busy. I mean, we'd love to have people come to our meetings and so forth. And it's kind of hard to reach them. And as I say, people are busy.
Yeah.
So I don't blame them. I don't know what else we could do. We would sure love to expand both demographically and age-wise.
Yeah. I know. I say this because right around the time of the George Floyd murder, I'm part of a group that started Coastside Families Taking Action.
Yes.
And we had a lot of momentum at the time. We engaged civically in the city council meetings. We endorsed candidates that all ended up, for the most part, like winning races. And then we were very activated. But to your point, it did get busy. And we haven't been as active as of late. But I have made a call to action for those folks that had engaged in the past. And they were mostly younger folks that had families, Coastside Families Taking Action, to join the Coastside Democrats. Because, you know, it's a great way to kind of engage in an organization that has the structure, the budget, you know, to a certain extent, but also the political support, and that can do a lot, and that can unite all kinds of voices and all kinds of folks in the Democratic Party, but also all kinds of ages. So I have made that call to action to Coastside Families Taking Action, and I'm making this call to action to any family listening to this today, any younger folk that younger folks to just join. It's a great group, very engaged, very lively, and you won't be disappointed.
We tend to meet late afternoon on the weekends or sometimes in the week during the weekdays. And we should talk about the protests a little
bit. Yeah, let's talk about that.
That's really been successful. We've partnered with Indivisible on all of them so far. They bring in a different group of people, but it's great. I mean, it's just fantastic to see the two groups working together to speak out on these issues that matter to so many of us. The first one, for the Dems, we did something we called Cover the Coastside that was neighborhood-based protests. And so we had people in Montara, Moss Beach, a couple different locations in El Granada, Casa del Mar, Poplar, downtown Half Moon Bay, and here in Cañada Cove. Each area had a captain and brought people out. And so they had, you know, a pretty significant group at pretty much every one of those intersections, which I thought was great because it brought neighbors together. In addition to expressing your opinion on these important issues, national issues that I know we're really not talking about today, but I think we all feel very strongly about, it was an opportunity to join together.
Yes, that's
true. Have a day
true.
Out with your neighbors.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know we have not much time before the break, but I think that's awesome. I was really happy to see the kind of engagement that happened in the local protest, and the fact that folks of all age, we were just talking about, including children, came out.
Yeah.
You know, that was really, really amazing to see. Is it true that there were like about 1,000 people from Half Moon Bay?
That's what the official sheriff's estimate was.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's
amazing.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. So this is probably time for the break, right, Crystalline?
Yes, yes. And if anybody wants to call in and chat with us after the break, the phone number is 650-560-9851.
This is Community Radio for the Coastside. 100.9 KHMP. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
Awesome. Welcome back. And again, we're here with Aisha and Barbara Dye. And if you want to get in on this conversation, 650-560-9851.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We are glad to be back. We were talking just about the local protests. I wanted to talk about things also now that are impacting some of our populations at a broader level. One of those things is the ICE raids that are happening. And a lot of the local protests were geared around that. So what are your thoughts at this moment in time, how we can support some of those vulnerable populations? You know, like many of them are our neighbors and allies, farm workers, you know, their children attend our schools. Is there anything that you think, like, we as citizens of Halfrin Bay can do to kind of, like, intervene and protect some of those populations that are most impacted by that?
We did have a meeting specifically about this, and I think people should have the red cards that spell out what to do if you encounter a situation like that. I think we all need to care about our neighbors and work with the authorities and the people who are support Coastside Hope and ALAS and so forth, who are out there on the front lines of trying to help people through this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for a lot of us, our role is to be supportive and helpful, and we may not run into it in our day-to-day lives. So I think if we do, we should all have those red cards and be prepared, because it tells you exactly what to do if you're mm-hmm. in a situation. Mm-hmm. And we need to know what the law is and what our rights are. Of course, they go tackling a U.S. senator.
I know, right?
But, yeah, it's really important, and it's something that we all care about. And, again, I'm glad we have elected officials who care about these issues, too, and are working hard to support our local key parts of our economy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you're right. I mean, once they start tackling U.S. senator, you know, like nothing is off limits, right? But I've myself felt vulnerable as a citizen. I'm a black woman. For those of you who cannot see me, but I'm also somebody who was not born in this country. You can hear it in my accent, right? I am a U.S. citizen now, so I am here legally. But still, that doesn't mean that I am off limits. I've felt vulnerable, even for my own child, who is a U.S. citizen, born in this country, in Burlingame. You know, I don't take it for granted, you know, that people who go after her. So, like, when everything came out, I made a conscious effort. I had a birth certificate for my daughter that I had misplaced. I went and I ordered one. I have a copy on me. I myself have a copy of my paperwork at all times. So I do think that if some of us that are here legally, that are U.S. citizens, born U.S. citizens, U.S. senators, you know, are feeling vulnerable, like, imagine how that is for the average farm worker that is undocumented, but that makes this country, right, that none of us would be able to go out and crop into farms if it wasn't for them, right? You know, so it's a very unfortunate time in history that we are in, and we all want to be ally, I'm sure. So thank you for saying that.
Do we, just out of curiosity, do we know if, and I don't personally know, if there's been any ICE activity locally that's been substantiated?
I not that I know of, and I do follow what I can see. But anyway, one thing that we're talking about doing for the club back there, is having a meeting probably in July with the mayor of Half Moon Bay and maybe the city manager, mm-hmm. just to talk about some of the issues that they are facing. You know, again, this goal of trying to bring the community together with the elected officials to talk about stuff, and they've done really good work. I think the farm worker housing is mm-hmm. excellent. I think they've been supportive of the groups that are advocating for our workers. So yeah. I feel good about that.
Yeah, I don't know about anything substantiated, but I've definitely heard hearsay from very credible sources of ICE, activity. You know, like I don't want to say substantiated, but the sources that I've heard are credible. But whether or not it's been substantiated, the fact that there is the fear, it's impacting people going into urgent care centers. It's impacting people going into schools. So whether or not they've been substantiated, the very fear is creating an issue.
Yes, yeah. I just wanted to just put out there, though, that to our knowledge, thankfully, we've not had, something come down on the coast side. So it's, really sad that we have to live in times of such fear for so many of our community members. But just knock on wood, thankfully, we're not having any major incidences as of yet, so...
Yeah. And talking of urgent care centers, because I was just talking about that, and the fear of, going into urgent care centers, which I have heard that directly from folks. It's a fear that's real, where some of the undocumented population are avoiding care because of that. I wanted to shift gear now to talk about the urgent care health center in Half Moon Bay. I was really pleased to see that it came about. It's like right across from my house. And I think it came about as an experiment, as a pilot from the county that had some utilization. I heard recently that it wasn't going to continue. And I don't know the details of that. I have to find out more. But I do think that it's really important to have care on the coastside. Because, if there are emergencies, we have a population that is aging, that lives on the coastside. We have pregnant women. We have folks that have daily emergencies. It's really reassuring to have something local. So I want to put out a call to, citizens, to, any elected official looking at that, to kind of engage on this topic even more. One of the things that
I think we have a phone call.
Yes, sure.
Take it away, caller. Who do we have with us today?
Well, you have Jim Henderson here on the line. Good morning to you all.
Hi, Jim.
And congratulations on holding down the fort for our wayward boy who is... I like your comment when you opened the show. You said he flew the coop. And I thought that was interesting that you used that terminology. Anyway, I just want to kind of take a break from the world of politics just for a second, because I don't know if you mentioned it. I didn't hear all of the show, but I wanted to call people's attention to the running of the goats. Yes, indeed. It's Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Coastside Land Trust is bringing out the goats again, and I guess it's kind of a annual tradition. They come out and people also come out to watch them do their duty of eating up the grass around the area around Railroad Avenue. But anyway, for those who like the goats and like to see them make their debut on the coastside on an annual basis on behalf of the Coastside Land Trust, it's going to be happening this Sunday morning at 10 a.m.
Oh, thank you. And we should note that quite a few of our agencies, both public and private, use goats as a ego way to, not ego-driven as in your mind, but eco. There we go. Oh, my coffee is not kicked in, people. an eco-friendly way to mow the lawns of the areas that are open space and undeveloped. So kind of throughout the spring and summer, there's a couple of different places on the area on the coastside where you can see the goats in action. And it's actually quite interesting how they do it. Trying to get them to focus on one place. And then I recently learned that there's an actual science to it. Like, they don't just let them go free. They only want them to eat the grasses down to a certain level so that they don't interrupt the habitat that is closer to the ground. So they actually monitor them and move them around based on where the grass, how much of the grass they've eaten down and things like that. So if anybody's interested in the science of the goats eating the grass, I'm sure Coastside Land Trust can talk about that during their event. So thank you, Jim, very much for letting us know.
I guess they say dozens of goats from Star Creek Land Stewards will trot down Poplar Street into the railroad right away. hooves clicking, tails wagging, and fuzzy heads bobbing. So anyway, if you like to see the goats in action, Sunday morning is your time to do it. Anyway, you guys continue to engage and have lively discussion, and we appreciate all you're doing.
Thank you, Jim. And actually,
Thanks, Jim.
Just before, I just that just reminds me that I should also put an event plug out there for Sunday. So after you watch the goats trot to their grassy destinations, downtown Half Moon Bay is having the annual Pride Parade. And so please visit us on Main Street. The parade will commence at 12 noon. And then there's all sorts of entertainment and activity planned for MacDutra Park between the parade and 3:30 p.m., I guess, I'm pretty sure. And there's going to be lots of booths out there, lots of informational booths, lots of fun booths, some art come out. You know, it's very family-friendly. And so that'll be something else happening this Sunday, too, right in the downtown.
Busy day Sunday, that's for sure. Okay, you guys, all the best. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
So I do know the goats have been on the county landfill, which is a little bit south, next to Seymour Bridge. The county has them first, and then they're walking from there to the new, to the railroad right away.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love seeing them whenever I see them. It's such a great thing for my daughter. She smiles, and it just livens up our day whenever we see them. And on the Coast Pride Parade, that's an important one. My daughter and I also attended the San Mateo County Pride Parade last week, and I was really happy to see that happen, because, again, the moment in time that we are in is not one where Pride Parades or anything that lifts up vulnerable, marginalized populations like the LGBTQ population. It's not a moment in time where we can take those things for granted anymore. You know, so I was happy to see those Pride parades happen, because I've seen a lot of people backing away from things like this, you know, from initiatives that lift up like any diverse or vulnerable population. So I was very happy to see that happen in San Mateo County, but also the upcoming Half Moon Bay parade that's there.
And the Dems will have a booth and will be marching.
Okay, so that's awesome. Yes. That's great.
And Sam Liccardo is going to be marching as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you wanted to talk about Coastline, the land trust, right?
A little bit, yeah. That's another place that I volunteer, spend a lot of time on. As many people know, its main task is protecting in land as open space, and people can donate lots. They mostly focus west of Highway 1. They can donate lots or... Every year when the people stop paying taxes on these small, very hard-to-develop lots on the coast, Coastside Land Trust buys them. So you can look on the website and see the patchwork of properties that they own. But slowly but surely, they're building up enough lots to make it very difficult to develop those areas. So the goal is not to prevent development. The goal is to preserve the land in a way that protects property rights. That's why I've spent so many years working with land trusts. So instead of saying no development, you say we as a community want to see this land preserved as open space, and we're going to come together and we're going to buy it at a fair price. So they do a lot of good work. I'm on the stewardship committee, and we have 10 different monitoring areas, and we visit them every spring. Every Monday we go monitoring, and we have a great team. We have someone come and do a bird list on eBird for us. We have some great volunteers from the Bird Alliance who help us with that. We do a plant list, and we're getting to the point when we were just at Wavecrest, we had almost 100 different plants, many of them native there on Wavecrest area. And then we take pictures, monitoring pictures each year of the same locations. And right now, they're adding a little bit of a shift to starting to think about stewardship of these properties. I mean, they've always taken care of them, but now we're talking about doing some habitat restoration and trying to improve these coastal plains, which are just, coastal prairies are one of the most endangered habitats in California. And the trees, we like the trees. Nobody wants to take out the trees, but we don't want the trees to keep spreading and eliminating the grasslands, which is what the raptors need for catching all those moles and gophers and so forth. So a lot of challenges in how to make that land as good as possible. And the last thing just to mention, and there's a webinar last Saturday that you can see on the Coastside Land Trust website about the trail project. Coastside Land Trust, under the leadership of a terrific woman, have got a grant to continue the coastal trail to Redondo Beach Road. And so it's going to come back a little bit from the edge, because the edge is where there's still native wildflowers. It's going to come back a little. It's also eroding. Come back a little and wind around, and then there's going to be stairs down to the beach at Wavecrest Canyon, the Arroyo there. So very exciting project, should be happening starting in the next month. So.
And then, I think I just recently learned that I believe, if I have my land trusts in the right order in my head, that Coastside Land Trust does a program where they teach fourth graders.
Yes, it's
about,
amazing. It's a fantastic program.
Yeah.
I've got GCESD, well, the board voted to donate to help support it at El Granada Elementary. The kids come, they first clear up an area near their school, and then they plant seeds and grow native plants. And then there's a couple of walks. So at El Granada, we take them up to Quarry Park and so forth. And then they learn, they dissect a flower. They learn just, they have... It's a terrific woman named Haley Peterson who runs the program, and the kids love it. And the other key part of it is that the high school students who are in the AP Agriculture and Environmental Science classes come and mentor the fourth graders. The fourth graders love it, and the high school kids love it. It's just so sweet. They get to know each other, and by the end of the year, they're just so happy to see each other.
It's kind of like the land version of Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Exactly. And so then they plant their plants in the area that they cleared. And, you know, we've learned through the years how to make them more successful. The one that's right out on the 50 acres by the Seymour Ditch is blooming right now and looks magnificent. So it's another good way to bring the native plants back to some of the coastal areas, because they were farmed. And so there's a lot of non-native grasses and invasive plants. But slowly but surely, the goal is we're going to really start working on bringing them back to coastal prairie.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And, I have a question on that. But before we do this, since we only have 12 minutes left, I just wanted to remind everybody of the call-in number, 650-509-851, in case you have any last-minute question. But building back on what you were just saying, activation toward preserving the land and beautifying Half Moon Bay. I love it here. It's definitely an area that's one of the most beautiful in the nation. I've often seen that activation pitted against the need for affordable housing, you know. So how do you kind of balance the need and the desire to preserve the land in Half Moon Bay versus the dire need for affordable housing? What do you think are some solutions to that? I know it's a tough question.
You're going to give me an easy question.
Yeah.
It's a hard one. I think in general, the basic answer I'd give is that the coastal open spaces are not the area for affordable housing.
Yeah.
That it makes more sense to put it close to areas that have services and do infill development, mm-hmm. Rather than bulldozing new areas along the coast. And I think it's a complicated area, the whole issue of the environmental review. I've seen it from both sides, and it is true that the environmental review project can be used to stop projects. It's also true that the approval project bit is hard. But I was the environmental project manager for a big development project for 5 years, in addition to the various other things I did. And I had like 950 city requirements and 40 pages of coastal commission and 45 pages of a habitat plan. I believed in those regulations. They were hard. There were times it was difficult to satisfy. Sometimes it was confusing. Sometimes they conflicted. But all in all, they made it a much better project. And so even though the process is cumbersome and difficult and could be streamlined, I think the Resource Conservation District has a thing with greenwashing, which is trying to make sure that projects do good environmental, have good environmental results, don't get bogged down in the kind of reviews that are for those that are, we really have to look at the potential impacts. I think there's ways to make the process better, which would allow us to make it easier to build low-income housing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the unfortunate part is that I think people see, have somewhat of a negative sense of what low-income housing means, and I don't agree with that. I think that if we have good, well-designed, well-managed projects, it's a benefit to all of us to have people have places to live. So I don't have an easy answer.
I think that's a good answer. I mean, I think like having it closer to services is definitely an area of opportunity. So that's our balance. I think that was a great, you know, like you were saying, I think killing land.
Oh, it looks like we have another phone call. Okay. Oh, gosh, so popular. Oh, just kidding. Lost them.
Okay.
there was an attempt.
There was an attempt at a call. You could still call in. It's 50-550-9851. But, I'll wait for your call. But in the meantime, I was just saying that I think, like, affordable housing is a huge priority, too, especially given the population and the demographics that we have in Half Moon Bay. I have attended some of the city council meetings, not as often as I wanted to, but there was the housing on Kelly, you know, which is a controversial topic, but it was closer to direct services. I think that kind of housing is definitely an opportunity for folks and for some of the migrant populations.
Even that, you know, dilapidated building on Main Street that was Coastside Printers, like, it's kind of unfortunate that they're asking so much money for that building that kind of makes buying something that needs to be essentially torn down. But, like, that would be a great spot to have, you know, some nice workforce shops on
housing.
The bottom,
yeah.
And then the whole, you know, top being affordable apartments and things like that. Like, there are places where people can get, I think, more creative with, like, whatever's there now and, you know, really update it to something that creates more affordable housing without taking away the beautiful open spaces that is a huge reason for why we all live here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Creativity. We need a little bit more creativity on the development side.
Yes. And that's why we need people to engage. I did have somebody that I know, I'm not going to name her, but she did confirm that there has been some ice presence on the coastline in Half Moon Bay, but it was more targeted. It wasn't a raid per se, but it was more targeted towards somebody that they were looking specifically. Mm-hmm. But I do think that aside, I mean, the call to action is the same, to empower all of us to lift up vulnerable population as much as we can.
Yeah.
What are some of the other, you know, like we have 7 minutes left, what are some of the Coastside issues that you think need to be lifted up, you know, that Coastside Democrats or that other groups that you are part of, like the El Granada Harbor District, have been working on that you think should be elevated here on this show?
Well, we need to think about fire resiliency.
Yeah.
We need to, complicated issues, very expensive things to do, and I know Ray Mueller is actively working on this, is we need to think about evacuation plans. We are on our own here if something really bad happens.
Yes.
And it's
good. That's a really important thing for us to talk about.
I think our caller might be giving it a go. Hello, caller?
Yes, I'm calling from El Granada, and I would like to know if anybody knows if there's music going to be in the summertime at the Cunha Park.
So that's music in the park by the city. I haven't heard officially if they're bringing back music in the park, but I would be surprised if they were not. Typically, it happens in the end of, I believe, starts in the end of July and goes through August, culminating in Summer's End Festival. They're very hopeful that Carter Park will be ready by the time Summer's End is set to take place, so that they can use all the new facilities down there, which, if anybody has a chance to go peek at Carter Park, even from the above parking lot, you can see some cool stuff. But I think the Parks and Rec of the city is trying to, continue the music downtown. I think it's really fun and lovely. So, check the city's website under the Parks and Rec calendar. If you just Google it, it should pop up, but they call it Music in the Park, and typically starts at the end of July.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Are there places for music in El Granada, too? Because I know this caller was from El Granada.
We are trying to have more programming like that. Our new assistant general manager, Hope Atmore, is fantastic. And so we are
Huge
adding
shout
more.
Out to Hope.
Hope is great. I would love to see us do, and we have funding for it. I would love to see us do more. You know, they've been doing, I've been promoting once a month hike. Or walk. I do a history walk, and I've done nature walks. People like the history walk especially because it's very cool history in El Granada. I would like to see us do more music. Once the park, I know it's going to be a couple years before any action actually starts with the park, but we are moving forward. And once we have a park there, the area right at the foot of Portola is meant to be Village Green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set up with the idea that, you know, have activities there. And of course, I want to say that one thing people didn't understand about the mitigated negative declaration is that it analyzes the worst impacts, but the board will still control activities. So, you know, there won't be rampant loud music or anything like that. The only two times that we had music on the dirt parking lot, people loved it. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear any complaints. So I think there is potential to have more activities even now. Down there, and I would love to see that happen.
Yeah, exactly. That way, it would be a good supplement to Carter Park and what's happening there. I think another issue that is definitely near to my heart and where I've been seeing a lot of improvement is the education, and the school board has shifted on the coast side. We have new representation. But it's been very difficult with the teacher negotiations in the past. And I saw recently that the teachers and administration got a 5% raise,
yes,
which is
well
amazing.
Deserved.
Yeah, we have new leadership. We have a great new principal that was announced at Hatch Elementary. He's the former principal of Cunha, who had been able to make some great changes. I am worried about the future of education in general, especially as it relates to cuts that have been made at the national level in terms of the education funding. But I am hopeful that at the local level, we'll still be able to kind of supplement the gap. And at some point in the future, I would want to bring, if I'm allowed to come back to this show, more speakers that can talk more about that and how we improve the funding of schools across the state, especially schools that are underserved, like the schools that we have in our district, where, you know, like the funding is not on par with like some of the schools that are over the hill. But despite that, you know, we have a lot more underserved students in some of our schools here and get a lot less funding. So that's definitely a topic that is top of mind.
And I think if anybody locally wants to donate sooner than later, because agreed, the situation for school funding is quite overly complicated and ridiculous. We have our local nonprofit, Cabrillo Education Foundation, right. So CEF. So if people donate to CEF, they specifically help fund programs. They help fund some of the teachers in, like, I think fifth grade science teachers funded by CEF at the high school, one of their programs. For getting students to get some work experience is funded by CEF. So there is at least one local group that also works with our PTAs and PTOs, trying to make sure. So I think that's a great topic for a future show. Thank you very much. And thank you, Aisha, and thank you, Barbara, for
being here. I'd just like to say
here.
That coastsidedems.org is the website if you're interested in more information.
Yes, great. Thank you.
All right, Coastside, we hope you have a great rest of your Friday, capping off a wonderful week, and we look forward to seeing you next week with my guest, David Oliphant. So be ready for that fun time.